I'm Bill Barole. Over the last few decades, I've done every kind of writing there is to do, from journalism to humor, books, movies, and television.
I'm Matt Ricardo. For the last 30 years, I've toured the world as a variety performer.
We've come together across the Atlantic to talk about creativity, what it is, where it comes from, why it matters.
Thomas Edison said, "To invent, you need a good imagination and a pile of junk."
This is Imagination and Junk, a conversation about the hard work of creativity.
Episode 28, The A Word. Dear Bill, do you remember March 2020? You probably do. Two things happened to the world in March 2020. Number one, I did a gig in which I cracked the joke, "Welcome to this delightful and elegant super spreader event. It's an honor to be the last thing you people ever see." Which was still funny for about another week, and then very much not funny because of the other, arguably more important thing that happened. Now, in true podcaster style, I'm not going to talk about the pandemic. I'm going to talk about how it affected me personally. Stick with me, I'm going somewhere with this. So, I've been a performer all of my adult life, and I've talked on the pod about how important that part of my life is to my, for want of a better word, soul. So, in the few days and weeks after it became apparent that I wouldn't be performing for quite some time, I worried about how I'd cope. I had friends that kinda unraveled a bit without a live audience to play with, and I assumed the amputation of something that had been a key part of my life for so long would, well, hurt. But it didn't. I thought I needed to perform, but I'd got that wrong. I love it, I still love it, but I don't need it. Not specifically. When the gigs went away, I found myself filling the space with writing, making YouTube videos, taking photos, and of course we started making this podcast. And slowly I realized that what I wanted to do was make things. Those things didn't necessarily have to be on stage. I let these thoughts sit in my head for a while. We had some lockdowns here in the UK, some months of wisely staying at home, but there were a few weeks gap between them. I guess a gap between thinking it was over and realizing it wasn't. And in that gap, we were allowed to go out in very specific ways, to sit only outside restaurants, that kind of thing. Luckily, my favourite bar has always had seats outside, so one night, me and my wife sat there, outside Bar Italia in Soho, on our second Negroni, and all the thoughts I'd been having kinda spilled out. I found myself saying that I wanted to make things in different ways, in different media, that I wanted to write more and take more photos and learn how to make cool-looking videos, that I wanted to have an idea and only then decide what form it should take. And then I said the big sentence, "I want to be an artist." And my wife clinked her glass on mine with a grin and said, "Then go be a fucking artist." And that's how I think of myself now. But my God, it took 30 years of working in the arts, a global pandemic, and my wife giving me permission before I could say it. And it still feels a little bit odd when I do, even now. But the more I say it, the more it feels like a good thing. Sure, performing is what pays most of the bills, but if you ask me what I do, I'll say artist. Multidisciplinary artist. And when I do say it, I'm kinda encouraging myself to be it. The more I say it, the truer it gets. That's how labels work. That's what they're for. But why was it so hard to get there? What has society done to make that label feel like it has such a cringy reputation? It's almost as if the world wants the things that artists make. But come on now. You're a what? Really? What, do you wear a beret and have existential thoughts while drinking tiny coffees? I mean, I don't have a beret, but yes? So, This episode is about having the guts, the chutzpah, the nerve to call yourself an artist. So, Bill, get your beret, make yourself a tiny coffee, and I'll talk to you soon. Matt.
Dear Matt, I'm guessing you've heard this quote from Pablo Picasso. Every child is an artist. The problem is how to remain an artist once he grows up. This is such a famous example of easily digestible throw pillow wisdom that I've always suspected Picasso never said it at all, that it was bioengineered in the same lab that had the federal contract to produce snappy quotes for Maya Angelou. So instead of amplifying it one more time, let me start off with this, which has the benefit of being not only pithy, but demonstrably something that a human person once said. There's a young woman we know. Her name is June. When she was about 6, June and her mom were visiting the LA County Museum of Art, and June was sitting in front of a big painting with her notebook, sketching away. And a nice older lady happened by. In the version of this story I carry around in my head, she's Margaret Dumont. She happened by and stopped and leaned down to say to June, "Do you want to be an artist when you grow up?" And June replied calmly, "I am an artist." What did June at 6 have that you didn't have at, well, not 6, as you sat outside Bar Italia with Leslie and realized it was going to take some nerve to dare to call yourself an artist? I'd argue that it wasn't so much something she had as something she didn't have, self-consciousness. She hadn't yet, at 6, been exposed to that thing you talked about, the mechanism by which the world regards artistic self-identification as something suspect, something effete, a thing you really want to keep to yourself. If that self-consciousness is a learned behavior, it suggests that what Picasso said, or what the guys in the lab programmed the UNIVAC to spit out in Picasso's voice, is correct. Do we believe that? Do we believe that every child is an artist? I'm not sure I do. It feels awfully grand, feels sort of utopian, to say that every kid is born with the soul of an artist, and then the big bad world comes along and makes them shy about saying so. But I can sign on, I think, to something short of that. We have, as kids, a facility with processing new ideas. It's how we're wired. It's why learning a language or an instrument starts off easy and gets harder as we age. I wonder if this reluctance we feel to self-identify as artists has something to do with this. As it gets harder to acquire new skills, do more people in the herd abandon the attempt? Does it become seen or felt as something unnecessary, even frivolous? Is that what's behind it? Something evolutionary is what I'm talking about here. I don't have any trouble believing that just the exigencies of life as an adult, the daily walking around stuff, paying bills and doing the laundry and working a job, make it hard enough to think of art as something essential. Unless, that is, you're somebody like you, a person for whom art is the job. I'm talking about the rest of us. Is there this other thing swimming around under the surface? Are we fighting not just reticence or self-consciousness, but millions of years of evolution? Because if we are, whew, that's a tall order. After all, as Maya Angelou said, the bark that grows and twists around the human heart is stronger than oak, but also fragile. No, she didn't. I made it up. See how easy it is? I'll talk to you next time. Bill.
Dear Bill, I did not, in fact, know the Picasso quote from the Maya Angelou Consortium for Poster and Mug Designs, although I do remember when I was a kid seeing a thing hanging on the kitchen wall at my parents' friend's house that said, "Wherever else I serve my guests, they seem to like my kitchen best." Which even to my young eyes at the time seemed to raise questions. But anyway, your suspicion seems to be reliable about that Picasso quote. There's little to no evidence that he actually said it. It's also been attributed a few years earlier to John Lennon. According to quoteinvestigator.com, which is a real website on the internet, the first person to say something like that was the art critic Carlton Noyes in 1907. But it feels like one of those things people have always been saying forever because, and this is where we will start to disagree, it's true. The best person who currently says something like this is the great cartoonist and educator Linda Barry, which is why she used her MacArthur Genius Grant to bring together grad students and four-year-olds to try and have the kids' freeform artistic exuberance reinvigorate the older students. You ponder on whether every child is, in fact, an artist, and you come down on the side of no. I disagree. But this hinges on our definition of artist, and as you know, I'm a purist on this kind of thing. I think if you make something, anything, that involves what we would call creative decisions, that is, a choice you made that isn't governed by logic or effectiveness or sheer practicality, anything you do because it feels right or you just want to see what happens, well, then you're doing creativity, you're doing art, you're an artist. My definition on what and who an artist is very wide. Deliberately so. I've seen enough people who make things in niche, underground and emerging genres who get told that what they do isn't art to feel good about pushing back. I don't, however, think that every child is born with the soul of an artist, as you say, because I don't think that's a thing. But I do think that kids like to make creative things, and that's being an artist. The reason I think that it feels grand and utopian is the same reason that it took me so damn long to be able to use that word for myself. Because society, and particularly the capitalism bit of society, has, bit by bit, redefined and shrunk what that word means. It's got a list of things that it says qualify as artistic. It's got a hierarchy of what you need to do to be able to use the word, principally, are you successful on its terms rather than yours? It's muddied the waters to its own benefit, and I hate it. A kid doesn't need to sell a drawing to know that they're an artist. The drawing doesn't have to be good. It doesn't need to look like what they say it is. They made it. It's art. They're an artist. The difference between one of Linda Barry's four-year-olds and Pablo Picasso isn't big enough to be important when it comes to what either of them can call themselves. And that's the thing about me taking so long to be able to call myself an artist. I bet when I was four and doing drawings of spaceships on the rolls of printer paper my mum brought home from work, if you'd asked me, I would have said that I was doing art. That I was, in that moment, an artist. And I was. But in between the me of then and the me that sat outside Bar Italia was a lifetime of social conditioning, of working in an underappreciated art form and having creativity become my income stream. And all of that boring stuff gets in the way. It feels like grown-ups have really ruined the word artist. They've made it a gold crown, worn only by a few that everyone agrees are great and wonderful, while anyone else that casually uses it more often than not gets a heavy dose of the side eye. I don't think the word artist is a title to be bestowed. I think that hurts art. The word artist is a simple descriptor of what someone is doing. An artist is someone who makes art, and art is anything born out of creativity. That's all. All the other contractual clauses that seem to bog down that definition and restrict it and gatekeep it, well, they're the work of people not doing art. So I feel okay ignoring them. Now, I think you will disagree with much of this, which is kind of fun because we rarely disagree on the big stuff. So, have at it, Bill. I will talk to you soon. Matt.
Dear Matt, I like the image of four-year-old you sitting there drawing spaceships on a roll of paper your mom brought home from work, no doubt doing so in a perfectly cut child-size waistcoat. Look, just go with it. It's how I picture it. I was a drawer, a doodler as well, although my thing was cars. And even if I had no conception of scale or perspective or what made for clean lines and a pleasing shape, even though my cars were all sort of misshapen in the same spectacularly maladroit and unattractive angular way, I liked what I drew. Imagine my surprise years later when I realized that I had designed the Cybertruck. The lawsuit is pending. You've made some persuasive arguments, although it did occur to me to wonder when you said, if you make something, anything that involves creative decisions, you're an artist, whether that was being a purist, as you put it, or just reducing the definition of art down to the point where it sort of dribbles away into meaninglessness, like a thin, watery soup. An idea soup, if you will. I'd also argue with the distinction you've made between something we call the soul of an artist and the fact that kids like to make stuff and that's de facto being an artist. But we're really deep in the weeds now, and besides, you know what? You convinced me. You turned me around. If what we're talking about is definitions, then you're right. Just as society has a right to define art in any fashion it sees fit, so do we as individuals. I maybe get a little skeptical when you say that anything that springs from a creative instinct is ipso facto art, but in the moment we're in, I'd rather see art defined too broadly than too narrowly. The former is harmless at worst, the latter is pernicious. So I'm with you on this one. Viva la revolución and all that. And with that, let me turn to something else you said. You said, apropos of finding the nerve to call yourself an artist, when I say it, I'm encouraging myself to be it. The more I say it, the truer it gets. Honestly, I don't think the thing has to be more complicated than that. Sometimes in these episodes, we get wrapped around the axle a little bit, pulling and stretching our thoughts like taffy, and wow, that is a powerfully mixed metaphor, but you know what I'm saying here. We overthink. I do anyway. So let me turn now to a simpler frame for this thing, the utilitarian one. If you want to be an artist, start by calling yourself one, and then dare the world to tell you you're not. It really doesn't have to be more complicated than this. And the daring is everything. What you make is the dare. It's the living proof that you are what you say you are. And as you've said, you don't have to produce anything very much or even very good by the lights of the world. Because the dare isn't about volume, which is irrelevant, or quality, which is subjective. It's entirely about the simple, irrefutable fact that you're making something. Let me end with a question. Is this why the taxonomically less ambitious term maker has taken on so much momentum? Because it's just easier to wrap our mouths and our brains around? And if that's the case, does it matter? I'll talk to you next time. Bill.
Dear Bill, look, I've got to be honest, I didn't draw spaceships. Saying that I drew spaceships was a deliberate cultural dumbing down on my part, and I apologize. I drew Thunderbirds.
Thunderbirds are go.
Now, I have no idea if you got Thunderbirds over in the States, so this will either be very familiar to you or seem like some kind of wacky cheese dream of a fantasy. So when I was a kid, there was a TV show called Thunderbirds, created by a mad genius called Gerry Anderson. It was a science fiction adventure series about an organization called International Rescue, who had at their disposal a wide variety of fantastic futuristic vehicles, which they would use to, yes, rescue people in trouble. The vehicles were all called Thunderbirds. My favorite was Thunderbird 2, which flew and carried Thunderbird 4, which was a submarine, in its belly. Now, the detail I'm leaving out is that while the special effects were pretty good for the time, the actors were puppets with faces modelled on the actor James Garner. It was filmed in Super Marionation, which was Gerry Anderson's way of saying, look, guys, it's puppets. Anyway, after you've typed Thunderbird 2 Takeoff into YouTube and marvelled at the palm trees, we will finally get to the point, which is that I was on my school holidays and there weren't any fresh episodes of Thunderbirds on TV, so I got the rolls of hole-punched, green-lined computer paper my mum had stolen from work and I drew my own episode. Not spaceships, Thunderbirds. Listening to your previous segment as I sit here in my dressing room before a Saturday night show put a smile on my face. And not just because you agreed with me, okay, perhaps partly because you agreed with me, but mostly in the way that you did. Firstly, I think you're right that the reason the word maker has had some popularity is because it's not the target on your back that claiming to be an artist is. It's more practical, easier to justify. It doesn't confer any social rank or aspirational cachet. It says you made something. It's less arguable. But yes, I'm very glad that you climbed aboard my very broad definition of art. I think the wider we define art and artists, the more fascinating and beautiful things become. There is artistry, that is, creative choices, to be found wherever we look. Whether the person making those decisions considers themselves an artist is only important to them. The world is better when you look at it through art glasses. Side note, write that down as another merch idea. Art glasses. I have no further information at this time. Making your personal definition of art as wide-ranging as possible demystifies it, makes it more fun, more powerful, and more interesting. And I think that's an important thing to do. As I've said before, I very much dislike how mainstream definitions of art still hinge on the classic genres, and therefore are tied to structures of class, gender, location, privilege, and all that fun bullshit. Recently, I came across a social media post by the British writer David Quantick. He had reposted a news clipping about buskers being banned in one of London's main street performing pitches, and he was happy about it, posting it with the caption, "Some good news at last." So I pushed back a little by replying, "Yeah, fuck independent artists." To which he replied with, "Independent artists is a bit strong," which baffled me. I mean, in what way are buskers not the absolute definition of independent artists? Did he think that they're all signed to 3-album deals with Def Jam? I mean, sure, you can like or dislike whatever you choose to, but to deny that someone living rent check to rent check from the money that people voluntarily put in their guitar case after hearing them sing is an independent artist? As the kids say, I can't even with that boomer shit. So this translates in my head to a damn good reason to be as inclusive as possible when defining art and artists. I love your encouragement to call yourself an artist and dare the world to tell you that you're not. Yes, that's the stuff. And the world might and probably will try to tell you that you're not. Loudly, rudely, but it won't matter because that soul of an artist that we've been talking about, that's your soul, not theirs. So they do not get to give it a name. You do. And if the label you choose is artist, awesome. Maybe one of the very few things that makes you eligible to call yourself an artist is an agreement not to say that anyone else isn't. I'll speak to you soon, artist. Matt.
Dear Matt. Okay, look, I also have a confession to make. When I said I doodled cars as a boy, what I meant was, and follow me here, no, I didn't. I never did that. It was not only a cultural dumbing down on my part, it was a deliberate lie to set up a totally gratuitous slam on Elon Musk and his big stupid car. Do you think by the time this airs, people will have to scratch their heads to remember who Musk was and will say, "Oh, yeah, right, Musk, that nitwit toady who clamped onto Trump like a barnacle until Trump realized he was stealing focus and sent him scuttling back to the private sector"? Yeah, I don't either. Too bad. We did have Thunderbirds over here, although I wasn't a regular viewer. My tastes ran more to vintage Looney Tunes, particularly those made by Chuck Jones. My favorites were the Coyote and Roadrunner cartoons, although I just thought they were funny, and didn't yet appreciate their high artistry. Or, for that matter, their extreme discipline. Did you know that Jones once authored a set of 9 rules for the Coyote and Roadrunner cartoons? I mean, he actually wrote them down and followed them rigorously. These ranged from number 1, the Roadrunner cannot harm the coyote except by going beep beep, to number 9, the coyote is not allowed to catch or eat the Roadrunner. When you reconsider the cartoons knowing this, you realize that Jones wasn't fooling around. You can't name a single one in which he violated the rules. Although a later set of cartoons, which were subcontracted out by Warner Brothers in a cost-cutting move and directed by Rudy LaRiva, did. And guess what? They were awful. Because Chuck Jones was a genius, and Rudy LaRiva wasn't, and he didn't follow the rules. We should do an episode on rules in creativity. Let's stick a pin in that. Anyway, we can agree that this guy Quantick, despite having the same extremely cool moniker as a prominent DJ, is all wet. especially when he blanches at the notion that buskers are independent artists. It seems to me he was probably bumping on the word artists rather than the modifier independent, but you remember the tagline for Alien? In space, no one can hear you scream? I propose a modern corollary. In social media, no one can hear you making a nuanced distinction. It's less snappy, but I think it's true. However you slice and dice what he said, though, you were right to push back. And if that pushback allows you to bolster your case that a wider definition of what makes art is good, I'm all for it. Because that seems to be the hub around which this wheel of an episode has ended up revolving. And I'm good with that. So where do we come down on all this? I think we may have gotten tangled up on that whole thing about what does and doesn't constitute art, but that's okay. It must really be a grand philosophical mystery if a juggler and an ex-Newsweekly writer can't crack it. So let's settle instead on this. Calling yourself an artist is one part of an expansive attitude toward the whole notion of art. And an expansive attitude is what you want here. Gatekeeping does no one any good, even the gatekeepers, for whom the rush of defining some people and pursuits out is a sugar high. It doesn't do anything to make new or better art. The only way to do that is to roll out the biggest, broadest canvas. And the people who do it? Well, that's us. It's all of us who make things. Paintings, prose, performances, podcasts, and I suppose probably some other things that don't start with P. You see, I'm doing it right now. Being expansive. So, no matter what you call yourself, whether it's artist or maker or craftsperson or artisan, call yourself something. It all starts with that. Think of yourself that way, because no one has the power to tell you otherwise and make it stick. And once you've done that, go make something. It's your power. Go use it. And I'll talk to you next time. Bill. Imagination and Junk is written by Bill Barole in the U.S. and Matt Ricardo in the U.K., with audio production by Bill Barole. For more information, show notes, and bonus content, it's imaginationandjunk.com.